Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Pei, and we will begin on Daf Pei Amud Aleph, right at the top of the Amud at the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Lo Teach Peirish Shevach Mechaveroi. If somebody is buying the production of a nest from someone else, and as will become clear, Bezer Hashem is Baruch, in the Mishnah and the Gemara, that here where we speak about the products of a nest, what we mean is the birds of the nest. The halach is mafriach breicha rishona. He has to leave the first pair that's born with its mother. As the Mefarshim explained, what used to happen was that the dove lays a pair of eggs every month of the year, besides Adar. These eggs ultimately hatch, and one is a male and one is a female, which they themselves begin to mate, and they also continue to produce eggs, the same situation. Our Mishnah, explained the Mefarshim, is referring to a situation where someone bought the produce, the birds of a nest, but not the nest itself. And therefore, what has to happen here is the nest has to remain. If the eggs, the offspring of the mother, will be removed from this nest, the mother will also fly away and the nest will no longer exist. Therefore, to prevent the nest from collapsing, teaches us the Mishnah that the buyer, who is entitled to the birds that are being born in this nest, may not take the first pair of birds that are born. That first pair of birds that are born are left for the mother to have company to remain in the nest, and therefore the nest will be maintained. The Rishonim ask, how could such a sale be valid? As we discussed in our previous year, the halacha is in Adam Makna, something that hasn't yet come into existence cannot be sold. So how could this be sold? Some explain that our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rameya. The Rameya holds Adam Makna, Dovashla Balaylam. Others explain that even though the halacha is, then ain't Adam Makna, Dovashla Balaylam. But if the buyer and the seller of a Dovashla Balaylam agree that they want to complete this transaction, then certainly the transaction will be completed. And that is the case of our Mishnah, where these two individuals decided to keep this, that they want to have this transaction be valid. And a final pshat that I saw is the pshat that most Rishonim suggest. Even though, as we have been saying, ain odem makna davashla b'loilam, one cannot sell something that's not yet in existence, and therefore you can't sell fruit of a tree that hasn't yet come out. However, dekala paroisov, if you sell a tree with the intent being that the peiros of this existing tree should be sold, that would be a valid sale. And that's how the Rishonim explain is the case of our Gemara. It's referring to a situation that the dekel, the peiros of the shovich, was sold in order that for the peiros of the shovich will be given to the, should be sold from the seller to the buyer. It's also interesting to note a vort from the Yaros Dvash. As I said at the beginning, the birds, the mother bird lays a pair of eggs. The doves lay a pair of eggs every month, besides the month of Adar. So he explains that's why when the poor, the girl, the lot, that Haman drew to determine if what month he should destroy Chas v'Shalom Klal Yisrael came out in Adar, says the Medrash, Samach Simcha Gedoyla. He was extremely happy. Why was he extremely happy? Because he knew that Klal Yisrael is compared to a Yoina. Klal Yisrael is compared to a dove. And as we just said, the only month of the year in which a dove doesn't produce eggs is an Adar, so it's a bad month for the bird. So too he thought that this is a bad month for Klal Yisrael. But Klal Yisrael is above all of these issues, and a Klal Yisrael could always rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Continues the Mishnah. If somebody bought Peiris Kaveris, Peiris Kaveris means the production of a beehive, which means the bees. And as the Rishonim explained, the way bees multiply is that the bees are in a beehive where a large number of eggs are laid by the queen bee, which create young bees. When there is no longer enough room in that beehive, the queen bee with a number of bees fly to another branch where the beekeeper creates a beehive. And this continues every 9 to 10 days. This process is called swarming. Every group of bees that falls on a tree, on a branch, is called a swarm. So says the Mishnah, Peiris Kaveres, Neitel Gimel Nechilim. The buyer is entitled to 3 swarms of bees. Umisaris, and here we'll see in the Gemara, 2 pshatim in Misaris. 1 pshat in Misaris is that at that point, the beekeeper sterilizes the bees from no longer being able to produce more swarms. Or Misaris means alternate, and the Mishnah is describing which swarms are entitled to the seller and which swarms are entitled to the buyer. Chalot Shtavash, if somebody buys honeycombs from a beekeeper, the halacha is Meniach Beis Chalas. He has to leave 2 honeycombs behind, which will be for the bees that are left behind to have what to eat from. Zaysim Lokutz, if somebody bought an olive tree to cut the tree down for lumber, the halacha is Meniach Shtei Grufius. And here we have a Machlokes Rishonim. What is the definition of Shtei Grufius? The Rashbam says Shtei Grufius means branches. The halacha is he has to leave 2 branches behind. And actually, in understanding the opinion of the Rashbam, there's a Machlokes. Some say he has to leave 2 branches attached to the tree behind, whereas others say he has to leave 2 branches, but they do not have to be attached to the tree. However, other Rishonim do not describe this in terms of branches, but rather they're talking in the height of the tree. The height of 2 grufias, which is the size of 2 hands, has to be left over that may not be cut down. So our Mishnah began, asked the Gemara, that if somebody's buying the bees of a bee, somebody's buying the doves, he has to leave over the first pair of birds that was born to be company for its mother. And we will first learn our Gemara, Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach, like the Rashbam explains the Gemara. Ask the Gemara of Atanya, we learned in a Braisa that not just 1 pair is left over with the mother, for Atanya, Brecha, Rishonim, Vishniya, 2 pairs are left over. So how do we reconcile our Mishnah with the Braisa? Answers the Gemara, Am Rav Kahana, Loikasha, Hala, Hali Ima. The first pair that's left over is left over as company for the mother. The second pair that's left over is left over as company for the pair, for the newborn that needs also company, and that's why that second pair is left over. So as the Rashbam explains, our Mishnah is only focused on the company for the first bird, and that therefore the first pair of birds born is adequate company for that mother bird. However, the Braisa is not only focused on that first bird, it's also talking about the second pair, the second mother that's born, that it too needs company, and that's why another pair should be left over. Ask the Gemara, Mishna Ima. So what did we do for the first mother in order to give it company? The mitzvah abarta v'zuga d'shafkinala. It relies on its mate and on its daughter to be adequate company. Ask the Gemara, if so, Ihinami. So then the daughter, why do we have to leave over another pair for company for the daughter? Titstafsa ima vazuga to shafkinalo. Why can't it rely on its mate and its mother to be adequate company? Answers the Gemara. Ima abarata mitzvasa. Company for a mother. As we explained in our Mishnah, the mother needs company in order that it shouldn't fly away and that this entire nest should collapse, relies on its child to be its company. Barta imalai mitzvasa. However, a mother is not adequate company for a child. As we know, parents' relationship to children is stronger than children's relationship to parents. And therefore the mother having its daughter there is considered adequate company. The daughter having the mother there is not considered adequate company, and therefore we have to leave it a pair of children. So ask the Rishonim, if this is the way we're going to explain our Gemara, that adequate company is only a child, not a parent. So then the next pair that was born to the first pair of birds should also have to have a pair left over for it to have proper company. And indeed, because of this question, Tosfos explains the Braisa saying that the halach will be that the first pair that's born will always have to be left over, because it's always going to be there for company for its parent. The Rashbam, however, disagrees with Tosfos. The Rashbam explains that if we have a situation that you have a mother and it has its first pair of birds born to it, and then that pair also keeps its first pair, so we have in this nest three generations. So Rashbam, so to speak, speaks to the psychology of birds, and he says once there's such a large group of birds in a nest, three generations, that is adequate company, and no further company will be required, and the buyer may take all the future generations. The Rimigash has a different way of explaining the Gemara. He explained that our Gemara is referring, the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa is how many pairs were in the nest at the time of the sale. In the Mishnah, there were no birds left in the nest at the time of sale, and therefore only one pair of birds is left over. Whereas in the Braisa, there was already a pair of birds in the nest at the time of sale. And since there was already one pair there, we leave another pair. The Rashbam explains that the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa is that the Mishnah is referring to a situation where he just said, I'm selling you Peirei Shofchai, and therefore leaving one pair of birds is enough. The Braisa, however, is talking where he said, I'm selling you the Peirei Shofchai Chutz Mibreich Rishayna. Since he went into this great detail, two pairs of birds will be left over. We learned in the Mishnah, Peirei Kaveris, but if left over were, if somebody sold the bees of a beehive, so we learned in the Mishnah, Neitel Gimon Chilim, the buyer is entitled to take three swarms of bees, or Masaris, and then he cuts off. So as we discussed in the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to focus, what does the word Masaris mean? Poshup Shat, Masaris means to sterilize. But ask the Gemara, but Ma Masarsin? And as the Mepharshim explained, the Gemara is actually asking twofold question. One question is how is it physically possible to sterilize a bee? And even if it were physically possible to sterilize a bee, it should be usur. We know you're not allowed to sterilize a living thing. So B'mam Sarsen answers the Gemara, Arab Yudah Mishmul Bechardel. The sterilization takes place through mustard, which means that it's not a direct sterilization. And as the Gemara explains, Amri b'marov mishmeid Rabbi Yosef b'chanina, It's not that the mustard has the ability to sterilize the bee. Once the bee eats the mustard, so it has a sharp taste in its mouth. And as the Rashbam explains, once the bee has this sharp taste in its mouth, it's going to be busy trying to eat honey instead of propagating, instead of multiplying, and therefore the halacha is that it won't have any time to multiply. Along the same lines, the Yad Rama says the bee will be flying away from its beehive looking for food to take the sharp taste out of its mouth. And while it's looking for food to take the sharp taste out of its mouth, it won't have an opportunity to multiply. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest, also very connected, very similar, is that since the bees have the sharp taste in its mouth, they eat the honey in the hive. Once they eat the honey in the hive, they have room to hibernate, because now they've created holes in the hive where there previously was honey. And now they'll hibernate and they'll get up next spring ready to produce more bees which will belong to the seller. Rabbi Yochanan has a whole different explanation in Sirus. He explains Neutel Shlosh Nechilim B'Sirus, that the buyer and the seller alternate in receiving swarms. The buyer receives swarm number 1, number 3, and number 5, and the seller gets swarm number 2, 4, 6. A slightly different variation, the Masnisa Tana, the Brisa says, Neutel Gimel Nechilim B'Zachazeh, the buyer receives the first 3 swarms, Mikav Eilach, after the buyer takes the first 3 swarms, then they begin to alternate with the buyer getting 1 and the seller getting 1. As the Rishonim point out, the primary nafkamina between these two pshatim, that according to the first pshat, a seller does not want that a beehive should produce more than 3 swarms. And therefore, even if it produced more than 3 swarms, it won't be the buyers, because the seller and the buyer understand that typically a beehive will only have 3 swarms. According to the other pshat, there is no typical amount of swarms produced by a beehive, and therefore in such a situation, the halach is that they keep on, the pshat in the Mishnah is that they alternate. We learned in the Mishnah, chalas tvash, if somebody sold honey, meneich shtei chalas, you have to leave behind 2 combs, because those combs are needed there for food for the bees. As we have learned, Baruch Hashem, so many times, the halach is that food, liquids, are all mekabel tumah. As the Rashbam explains, as far as Kabbalah's tum is concerned, as far as receiving tum is concerned, it makes no difference whether it's a food or a liquid. The mekabel tumah by a kol shehu, the slightest amount. The real nafkamina is as far as giving off tumah. Food gives off tumah when it's the size of a kebaya, the size of an egg. Drink liquids only give off tumah when we have the shear of a revius, which is actually 50% larger. Rav Kahana, our sugya now be'ezer Hashem, is going to focus on the halacha of Kabbalah's tumah of honey. And Amar Rav Kahana, says Rav Kahana, dvash bekaveres, honey in its beehive, eini yotze midei machal olam, is always considered food. Alma, because obviously Rav Kahana is of the opinion, oichel kasava lebay machshava, that according to Rav Kahana, honey in a beehive does not require any specific thought that it should have the status of food, it's automatically considered food. Unlike other foods, which are not considered food until the owner specifically, mentally designates them to be food. That's the Rashbam's first pshat. The other pshat the Rashbam suggests in this Gemara is that the honey in a honeycomb is considered food as long as it's in the honeycomb. It only can be considered a liquid after it leaves the honeycomb. And as the Mefarshim explained, why is the Rashbam going to say this pshat? Because we know that food is only susceptible to be makabel tumah if it becomes wet by one of the liquids. One of the liquids that's always identified as a liquid that makes something mukhsh makabel tumah is honey. But if we're saying now honey is always considered a food, so then the question comes up, how will honey ever be a liquid to be makhsha food l'kabbalah's tumah? The answer, according to this pshat of the Rashbam, is very understandable. Because Rav Kahana is only referring to honey while it's in the honeycomb. But once the honey leaves the honeycomb, then certainly it could be in the category of liquid and it could be makhsha l'kabbalah's tumah. Says the Rashbam, however, if someone mentally decides that the honey in the honeycomb will be used specifically for the bees, then it's not considered a machel, it's not considered a food, and it's not going to be makabel tumah. Ask the Rishonim on the opinion of the Rashbam that food, to lose its status of being food just by one deciding that it will no longer be food is not enough. So why here does the Rashbam say that if I decide that the honey in the honeycomb should only be used for the bees, it doesn't have a din of an eichel? Rishonim offer a number of explanations in the Rashbam. One explanation I saw is that this is not really regular food. This is food in a honeycomb. And since it's not really full-fledged food, here the halach will be deciding that it should be used for dvoir, for bees, is enough that it should not have the status of food. Another pshat is that the honey that this person is deciding should be used for the bees and should therefore not be considered food, this may be even before this honey was ever produced. Certainly at a time before the honey was even produced, at that point one has a right to designate it as a machel behema and should not have the din of tumas eichlim. Another pshat that I saw really depends on a machloikis Rambam and Ravid. Eichlim, as we've been learning, are makabel tumah. However, if it's nifso, if it becomes disqualified, it's no longer considered eichel. Machloikis Rambam and Ravid, to what degree of nifsal do you need to have that it should not be considered an oichel? The Rambam's opinion is that once it's nifsal mechilas odom, it's already not considered an oichel. The Ravid's opinion, however, is it has to be nifsal mechilas kelef. So it could be explained in Mefarshim that the Rashbam is following the opinion of the Rambam that nifsal mechilas odom is enough that it should no longer be considered an oichel. And therefore, nifsa mechilas adam is enough, and therefore designation that it should be used for animal feed is equivalent to nifsa mechilas adam, and therefore once one decides that it should be used for the bees, it'll be enough that it should not have tumas eichlin. Ask the Gemara, Meisve, it says in a braisa, tvash bekaveres, honey in the beehive, ain't aloy oichel v'aloy mashke, is not considered oichel or mashke, and it's not mekabel tumah. Answered the Gemara, Amar Abaya, lo tzrichen eloy sh'tei chalas. This braisa is referring to the two honeycombs that were left over for the bees to eat, and those don't have the status, even according to Kahana, of oichel. And as the Rishonim explained, typically it was the two outermost honeycombs that were used for the bees' food. Rav Amar, and as Mefarshim say, Rava is not necessarily arguing halachically with Abaya. It could well be that Rava will agree that these two honeycombs that are designated to be the food for the bees are not Mekabel Tumah. But Rava doesn't like Abaya's explanation of the Braisa, because according to Abaya, the Braisa makes a statement, Dvash Bekaveris, honey in the honeycomb. Now Abaya says that this is talking only about the two honeycombs that are used for primary nutrition for the bees. Rava says there is no such indication that that's what the Braisa is speaking about. And therefore Rava says that this Braisa represents the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, who we discussed previously, Rabbi Elazar's opinion. That the Mishnah says in Masechta Shviyos, Kaveris Dvarim, regarding a beehive. Like this, we're talking about the honey in the beehive or the actual beehive. Hareka Karka has the status of prop of land, which we've learned. The Mishnah says in Masechta Gedushin, Karka is nikna b'kesa b'shtar or b'chazaka. A beehive is considered like Karka. Furthermore, v'kais from La Prozbo, as we know, the Torah teaches us that at the end, according to most Rishonim, of the Shemitah year, all loans are cancelled, and people therefore did not lend other people money because they were concerned that the loan would get cancelled. Hillel came up with the solution of making a prosbul, but a prosbul is only valid if the loiva has property, as we discussed, because it's lo shchiach, that it's unlikely that somebody would lend money to somebody who doesn't have property for which he could pay his debt back, or it reflects on the mechanics of a prosbul that requires karka. But owning a beehive, according to Beleza, is considered owning property that you can write a prosbul. Furthermore, Vedim Kabel Tumah Mekoyma, it's not Mekabel Tumah, because it's considered Mechubel Karka, and anything that's Mechubel Karka is not Mekabel Tumah. And if somebody takes off honey from this beehive on Shabbos, so it's considered that he did the malacha of Kaitzer and he's chayiv chatas. So according to Rabbi Elazar, we could understand the braisa very well. Since the kaveris is considered mechubel karka, and anything that's mechubel karka is not mekabel tumah. The chama ever disagree with Rabbi Elazar. They hold ein kais from a prosbul. It's not considered karka that the loiv could be able to write a prosbul based on it. The kinyonim of karka won't work for a kaveris. Mekabel's tuma mekayma. Veroidu menem b'shabbos, if somebody takes off honey from a beehive in Shabbos, potter. Most Rishonim explain, potter meaning that he won't be chayiv midaraisa, but it's still osser midarabonon. Potter aval osser. So the braisa, which says that it's not mekabel tuma, is following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Why indeed does Rabbi Elazar consider a beehive ke'arka? The pasuk says, "For yitbalaisa b'yaris davash." As we recall, Shaul, when Klai Yisrael was out at war, said that no one should eat until they completed the battle. Yonason, Shaul's son, was not aware of his father's proclamation, and he came back famished. And he took his stick and dipped it into the honey. And the pasuk in describing this event says, "V'yitbal oisai b'yaris advash." The question is, when we learn the pasuk, "V'chimayini yaretz advash," what does honey have to do with a forest? Aloy malach, my yarat toils me in a b'shabes chayiv chatas. Just like by a forest, if somebody detaches a tree from a forest on Shabbos, certainly it's considered to attach something that's mechubel karka. After vash, haroid men of Shabbos, so to buy honey, if you take it out of the beehive, it's chayiv chatas, it's considered that you did a malacha. Meisvei asked the Gemara a question on Rava's pshat, which again, to review, the Gemara, Rav Kahana said that honey in the honeycomb is an oichel and it's mekabel tumah. The Braisa said, "Ein aloy oichav aloy mashka." So Abaya answered, "It's talking about the two outer honeycombs which are used for food for the bees. That honey is not considered an oichel." Rava said that this Braisa was following the opinion of the Rebbe Elazar, that's considered mechubel karka. Rav Kahana, however, holds like the Rabbanon, Meisve, it says in the Braisa, Dvash hazob mikavarto, honey that comes out of a beehive, the loch is, and a loich of a mashka. It's not considered an oichel mashka as far as Kabbalah's Tum is concerned. Bishlam alad baya nicha, Abaya, we can understand this price according to Abaya. He's going to say that this price is talking about the honey that's coming out of these two outer combs, which are designated for the bees' food. And therefore, even after the honey comes out from the hive, it's still not considered food unless the owner specifically designates it as food. El Rava, but according to Rava, who said that the Braisa before was talking about honey in the honeycomb, because the honey in the honeycomb, as Rabbi Elazar teaches us, is considered mechubel karka. But once it comes out of the honeycomb, the case of this Braisa, Dvash Hazov Mikavartoy, everybody would agree that it's Oichel Mashka. Yet the Braisa says it's Ein Eloi Oichel Eloi Mashka. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Zvid, the Braisa is referring to a situation that the honey oozed onto a kli mos and therefore never had a chance to attain the status of a oichel that it should be makabel tuma. Rachba Yaakov Amar kigoyin shezava gabe kaskasin. If it oozed onto splinters of wood, that also made it unusable as food. Machloikus Rishonim, how to understand these two terutzim? Many Rishonim say that there's really no machloikis between Rav Zvid and Rav Achba Yaakov. Rather, they're giving two different examples of how we can have a situation that it's never roi lekabel tuma. However, the Rashbam disagrees. The Rashbam said that they're arguing. He says that according to Rav Acha, if they would only in because they fell on the splinters of wood, are they not mekabel tuma? But if, according to Rav Acha, they would fall on a kli mos, they would be mekabel tuma. That wouldn't be enough to take off the status of kabbalah's tuma. Ask the Gemara another question on Rava's explanation. Meisvei, it says in the Braisa, dvash bekavartoi, ein eloi oichav loi mashka. Food in honey in the beehive is not considered oichel or mashka. Chishev lov lachila, but once I decided I want to use it as an oichel, the loch is metame tumas oichlin. I will have tumas oichlin. As we learned, it becomes tame at a kol shehu, and it gives off tuma when it's the size of when it's the sheer of a gebeya. The mashkin, if I decided to use it as a liquid, metame tumas mashkin, it's mekabel tuma bekol shehu, it gives off tuma berevis. So bishlam alan bayanicha, we could understand the Braisa very well according to Baya, because once they were set aside for bees, but once I decided to use it for human consumption, they're considered like an eichel. El Rava, but according to Rava, Kasha, according to Rava, if they're connected to the ground, they're mechubel karka. Something that's mechubel karka is not mekabel tuma. So what's the difference that I decided to use it for, that I will eat it or drink it? Amalach Rava Tritzachi. This is the way to understand the Braisa. Chishav Lav Lachila Ein Matam Tumas Eichlin. A Mashkin Ein Matam Tumas Mashkin. Because we're following the opinion of Rav Elazar that since it's Mechubel Karka, it's not Mekabel Tuma. Tanya Kavasa Rav Kahana says the Gemara. There's a Braisa that corroborates Rav Kahana's Psak Dvash Bekavartoi Matam Tumas Eichlin Shloim Achshava. It's considered food. So we learned in the Mishnah, Zaysim Lokutz, if somebody has olives, if somebody bought an olive tree to cut it down to use for lumber, Menich Shtei Grufius, he has to leave two branches behind. Tanar Abonin, says the Gemara, we learned in a Braisa, Haloi Keach Ilam Chaver Lokutz, if somebody purchased a tree from somebody else to cut down to use the wood, Magbim in a karak tefach, he has to leave one tefach above the ground and cut. He has to leave a stump that's at least one tefach high. Besulas a shikma, if it's a tree that was never cut before, he has to leave gimel tefachim, three tefachim. Sadna shikma, if it was a tree that was already cut before, so it already went through cutting and growing, then beis tefachim. leaving a stump of two tefachim is enough. Bekanem gufanim, in the case of reeds and vines, minakak ulamala. He could only cut from the lowermost knot and above, so that it can regenerate. But the column barozim, palms and cedars, chayfim misharish. He could even dig and uproot entirely, the fish and gezamachlev. They will not regenerate anyway. Once the trunk has been cut, they're not going to regenerate. So, somebody who sells such a tree obviously had no intention of keeping any part of it for himself, and that's why the person could cut all the way. Ask the Gemara, Ubsul Sashikma Gimel Tfachim Beinan, is it true that when you're cutting a tree that was never cut before, the shikma tree that was never cut before, you need to leave three tefachim for mini and cut some psulsa shikma v'shvias? One may not cut a psulsa shikma v'shvias here, neisha avoida, because it's considered an avoida, and we know that we're not allowed to work the land of Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year. Rav Yehuda Eimer, kedarkei aser, you're not allowed to cut it normally, al magbi yot tefachim kaitzim. You could cut, you have to leave 10 tefachim above the ground, and you could cut the tree, or you could cut it all the way down. You could cut the tree in these harmful ways. Either leave 10 tefachim, or cut it out entirely. So now the Gemara explains. Me'em ha'aretz, Yehuda seems to say that cutting it all the way down to the ground, hudakashi, it's harmful to the tree, and therefore may be done in the Shemitah year. Ha'idach, ma'ala, but any other cutting is beneficial to it. So we see that any stump is enough. So why does the Braisa say that you have to leave over a three tefach trunk for regeneration? Answers the Gemara. Gimel tefachim, when you cut it and leave a stump of three tefachim, certainly ma'ala, it's beneficial to the tree. Me'am aretz, if you cut it all the way down to the ground, vadi kashla, it's certainly not good for the tree. Mikan ve'elich, above these areas, be above ground level, but not yet three tefachim, loy makshi kashle, it isn't necessarily harmful, however, v'loy aluy ma'alule, it isn't definitely beneficial. Gabiv shvius. So when it comes to hilchos shvita shmiyas, avdinim midi devadi kashloi. In order to be allowed to do it, we have to cut it in a way that's certainly harmful. How do we know that it's certainly harmful? Cutting it down all the way to the ground. However, gabiv mekach umemker, avdinim midi devadi malva. Here we have to do something that we have to leave over, something that will certainly be beneficial to the seller. How much must be left over? Three tefachim. But the column of Arozim, we learned when it comes to palms and cedars, Daloch is choifer or mashrus, the fish ain't gizli machlef. We could dig all the way down because these things don't regenerate. Ask the Gemara, the eres ain't gizli machlef. Is that indeed the din? Is that indeed the fact that a cedar doesn't regenerate? For Darash of Chi Barululoni. My diksif, it says in Pasuk Tzadik Atom and Yifroch, ke eres bavonon yizge. The tzadik is compared both to a palm and to a seder. And the question obviously is, in nema tamar, lama nema eres, the nema eres, lama nema tamar. What does the Torah have to compare him to both? Answers the Rav Chibar Luloni. Ilu nema eres, v'loy nema tamar. Had the Torah only compared the tzaddik to eres and not to a tamar, hayisi oimer. Ma eres, en oisa peris, just like a cedar doesn't produce fruit, af tzaddik ein oisa peiris, he doesn't receive any schar b'olam haba. Or you could even say more, says the Rashbam, there is no schar for doing the right thing. Lekach nema tamar, that's why the Torah says tamar, that certainly there is schar for our maisim tamar. Vim nema tamar v'loy nema eres, if the Torah only called a tzaddik a tamar and not a eres, hayisa amar ma tamar en gizay machlif, just like a palm doesn't regenerate, af tzaddik en gizay machlif. L'kach nema eres, the Torah compares a tzaddik to an eres that it does regenerate. As the Mefarshim say, what does it mean that a tzaddik regenerates? that either if he chas v'shalom falls, he will be able to get up again, or that he leaves over children like himself, he leaves over tzaddikim. Elochim ma'iskinen, says the Gemara. So here we see that Erez does regenerate, and our Braisa says that you could cut the Erez all the way down because it doesn't regenerate. Elochim ma'iskinen, says the Gemara, b'shar mine erozim. Different types of erozim. The 10 types of erosim. Erez is the arza. Shita is the turnisa, a pine tree. Hadas is also is the hadas tree. Eit shemen is the farsma, the balsam tree. Barosh is barsi, a cypress tree. Tidar is a shaga, is a teak tree. And tashur is shervina, is a shervina tree. Ask the Gemara. We said there are 10, but the Pasuk only mentions 7. Hani Zayin Havah, there are only 7. Answers the Gemara, Kiyasar of Dimi Omar, Hasif Aleim, Aloinim, Almoinim, and Almoigim. Amoini, Abutni, Amoini, Beluti are oak trees, Almoigim, Aksisi is coral. Ikadamri, that the group of 3 that were added are Aroinim, Armoinim, and Almoigim. Armoinim are Ori, laurel trees, Armoni is Dulvi, chestnut tree, and Almoigis Ksisi is a coral. The Mefarshim explain that our Gemara just compared a tzaddik to an Erez and to a Tamar. And they say the common denominator between an Erez and a Tamar is that, because our Gemara is learning that an Erez regenerates and a Tamar gives Paris. But the common denominator between both of them is that neither the regeneration nor the payers that they bear come immediately. And that's what the Gemara is saying is the pshat of a tzaddik. The world needs tzaddikim. And yes, when the tzaddik will leave the world, there will be another tzaddik. But there's going to be an interval through which, before the new tzaddik comes. And there's going to be time until a person gets a schar. And that's what the Gemara means when it says that tzaddik is like a Tamar and an Eris. But there's a beautiful pshat from the Noam Elimelech in this pasuk. He said, tzaddik tamar yifrach. A tzaddik who is like a Tamar, as we said, gives Paris. A tzaddik who isn't just concerned about his own dalet amos, about his own area. Rather, he's concerned about others. He teaches Torah to others. Yifrach, he will grow to very great madregas. Ke'erez, however, if the tzaddik is only like an erez, he's not giving peiros. He only is worried about his own learning. He's only worried about his own mitzvahs, but he isn't concerned about others. He won't come to that high madrega of yifrach. He will remain only at the madrega of yizgah. It is our obligation to influence and to spread the word of Hashem, the word of Torah, tzaddik katomor yifrach.